Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, editor of PWTorch.com and MMATorch.com, and host of this, the PW Torch Livecast. This is day four in a row this week. I hosted Monday, immediately following Raw, taking your phone calls and reacting to a memorable and eventful edition of Raw that we'll be talking about on today's program. And Tuesday night, I was joined by longtime Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Pat McNeil to discuss SmackDown as soon as that show went off the air. Yesterday, the midweek... That was actually Greg Parks who joined me Tuesday. Yesterday, it was Pat McNeil, both Torch columnists. Pat joined me yesterday on the midweek flagship edition, and we talked broad array of, well, mostly WWE topics on a week like this, as happens on pay-per-view weeks. That aired at 1 Eastern on Wednesday, available, of course, on demand at pwtorchlivecast.com or on our podcast feed. And now it is Thursday, February 16th, 2017. It is Interview Thursday, and I am very pleased to bring one of our favorite guests here on the program back onto the show, former WWE creative team member, professional stand-up comedian, host of the We Watch Wrestling podcast, Matt McCarthy. Matt, welcome back to the livecast.
Party on, Wade.
Great to hear from you. How's life?
Probably the best it's ever been. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How's fatherhood?
It's the greatest. It's very difficult and very rewarding, and I'm the luckiest SOB on the planet Earth.
I hear you. I concur. I feel that way. All right. So much going on at WWE. I am excited to talk to you about it and get your take on all the developments. I don't even know where to start, but let's start with your thoughts on the SmackDown side, the WWE world title situation. Randy Orton, we haven't talked since Randy Orton won the Rumble. Then Bray Wyatt wins the Elimination Chamber and the championship. He retains it and pins John Cena. Sean Waltman, on his show, said that he was backstage, and John Cena insisted on being the one to put over Bray Wyatt as opposed to AJ. I don't know any more context of that, but that's what Sean was saying. He sat down with AJ also and talked to him, and AJ put John Cena over as the man. AJ had nothing but good things to say about John, according to Sean, in their private conversation. Well, their private conversation that Sean has shared with us, which was kind of him. and now we have, and then we had at the end of the match, Randy Orton come out and say, as long as I'm your servant and you are my master, I'm not going to fight you at WrestleMania. Matt, your take on this three days of developments through Sunday through Tuesday, along with Randy winning the Rumble. Do you like it? Are you not sure yet? You got to see where it goes. Where do you stand on this?
Well, yeah, you know what? I was excited when Randy won the Rumble. I didn't see it coming. I was in the audience the first time Randy won the Rumble in 2009 at the Joe Louis Arena in beautiful Detroit, Michigan, with my co-host of the We Watch Wrestling podcast, Vince Averill. It was actually several years before we even started the podcast. And we're doing a live show at Chicago March 11th, and we are extremely tempted to go to the Joe for the last Monday Night Raw that Monday before they tear the thing down. So who knows? But at any rate, I thought it was really smart booking, because Roman is, you know, regardless of how the company perceives him, he is the biggest heel in the company. And it was, you know, certainly a way to send the the people home happy. Whether they were rooting for Randy or not, they were certainly rooting against Roman. And I don't think anybody had Randy as their pick. You know, it was a lot of talk of Goldberg or Lesnar or Undertaker or Roman or whomever. So I thought that was really interesting. And it was also, it made sense because it's like, you know, in all likelihood, Bill Goldberg will probably win the title from Kevin Owens at Fastlane. I don't know if that necessarily needs to happen because it's one of those things like an Undertaker match at WrestleMania doesn't need a title on it to make it special. You know, Bill Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar doesn't need a title on it to make it special. And so it was interesting to see, you know, at first it seemed like, well, you know, it was going to be John Cena versus Randy Orton again, for the title again, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's, you know, the idea of pro wrestling is to give people something they haven't seen before. Albeit we haven't seen that in quite a long time in scale of how often we would see Randy versus Cena. But, now as it turns out, that's not even going to be the case. If I had my way, I would have much preferred to see Randy Orton versus AJ Styles at WrestleMania. I think that would be a five-star classic. And frankly, I would have rather seen Bray Wyatt versus Luke Harper at WrestleMania. I think that has much more backstory than Randy and Bray. They kind of inserted Randy into the Wyatt family, and it seemed like it was building to the eventual split between Randy and Bray. Although that's not how they're portraying it now, you know, like you said, Randy says, I'm your servant and I'll do what you say. So it is interesting. I wasn't thrilled at first. My first reaction of Bray winning the title was a little bit of a feeling that it might've been a few years too late. I think Bray has lost a little bit of steam. But then I started thinking about it. I was like, well, you know what? He certainly deserves it. He's certainly due for it, overdue for it, in my opinion. But then at the same time, he does need some reheating and some reconstruction, and that's the best way to do that. I mean, SmackDown needs a top heel, you know, with some validity, and put the title on him. That makes all the sense in the world. So I think it's panning out to be very, very clever booking. And what you said, I hadn't heard that story about Cena and AJ and from Xbox perspective, but that makes all the sense in the world. John Cena is the man. I mean, I worked with him, you know, hand in hand when I was there as a writer, and he's the man. I mean, he really is. I mean, I can't say enough good things about John Cena, and he really loves the pro wrestling business, and he loves WWE, and he knows what he's doing, and he's a very smart, charismatic, talented guy. I'm sure that AJ did say that because it's, you know, AJ's another one. He's very smart, extremely talented. You could easily say that he's the best, you know, in-ring performer in the company right now. But I mean, eventually, hopefully, we do get to see that AJ Styles versus Randy Orton match because, I mean, those two would just blow it out of the water. But as it stands right now, probably Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho would be the match I'm not necessarily looking forward to the most at WrestleMania. I think my interest is the most piqued on Goldberg-Lesnar just because that has been so tremendously booked. But I think just as far as in-ring work, and the story that has fed into it, Owens and Jericho is going to steal the show. Can't wait.
This whole season is shaping up as fascinating, and I still think there's some twists and turns to come, even if it lands at the expected matches. I think that
right.
Since it's not officially announced yet, watching that play out is better than when as a viewer, you're watching from Rumble to Mania, and it's the same people talking about the same match over and over. And by the time you're 2 weeks out from Mania, you're like, please just get over with so we can move on to some new feuds. And I think that it seems like we're prepared to pace. It seems like the pace is better this time. I have a related email. We talk about John Cena being the man, and I agree. I mean, I think AJ's got to feel so happy being around somebody like John Cena, who won,
yeah,
you can have a great match with. I mean, great match with at the Royal Rumble. One of Cena's best, if not the best, and in the top tier with AJ. And the work ethic. I mean, AJ has this work ethic, pride in what he does, a single-minded dedication to it. You know, he and Cena, nobody would have said this 8 years ago, but are, you know, two peas in a pod in more ways than I think Styles lovers and Cena haters would like to admit. Okay, but Randy Orton, I brought him up. You commented on him. He's getting this increased push. He's in this Bray Wyatt storyline. The crowd is still cheering Randy, which you can look at as, boy, Randy is just this valuable commodity. People really respect him. You can also look at it as this Wyatt family faction and the alliance with Randy isn't working in WWE's ability to just get fans to play along, to line up the storylines with the emotions that they feel towards the wrestlers in the ring is broken. There's something not there when the fans are popping for Randy Orton almost no matter what. And so here's an email question related to it. Josh in Orlando, he says, sorry if this is sloppy or rushed. I'm trying to get this in before my shift starts. He emailed this 13 minutes ago. with all the recent talk about Randy Orton's slow, plodding nature and methodical style in the ring, I'm reminded of his return from injury in July 2016. He had a hot promo segment with Chris Jericho and a good string of matches and segments leading up to his match with Brock at SummerSlam. People were so high on him that many advocated for him to go over Brock and get a renewed mega push. Many of those same people, I'm sure, would now balk at that idea. In your experience, what makes Randy Orton tick? I can't figure out how the same guy can be so good one month, then a total uninspired bore the next. Is he just temperamental or selfishly holds back when he isn't feeling it? How does the creative team work around this to ensure that his performance lives up to their efforts in trying to write his character? I think it was Travis Bryant who made the analogy of Orton being the guy who puts in his 8 hours solid, takes his whole 15-minute lunch break, and isn't willing to negotiate that. Thought it was a great analogy. Matt, yeah, I mean, the Orton-Harper match on Sunday, I thought it was a good match. Not very good, but I thought it was a good match. Had better second half, first half. I thought Harper really tried. But there's still something that nags at me a little bit with Randy because he wrestles like I'm about to talk. He gets his point across, but you have this anxiety that you wish he would get to it sooner. So he articulates his moves well, but he doesn't seem in any hurry to get there. And it seems more of a performance than a fight. And it frustrates me because I just want him to turn it up 20% more often or maybe across the board. So that's my take on Randy. It's not everybody's. Most people seemed higher on Randy Harper than I was. Some were down on it a little more. But with your experience with Randy and being in that company and then just kind of watching him, what do you assess about the ups and downs? Some people think he got a concussion with Lesnar and hasn't been the same since and that he was hot. I look back to the Daniel Bryan feud, which I think we're all looking forward to, and it was kind of a letdown. You know, he kind of wrestled like I just talked a minute ago against Daniel Bryan, who he should have been having these 4-star matches with, and he had 3-star matches. And so to me, Randy's sort of the B-minus player. He's always reliably B-minus, but I don't see him rise above to that adrenaline rush of AJ Cena. So, I mean, your thoughts on that, your perspective.
Wow. Well, to start at the beginning, I think the fans cheer Randy because he's a star, and he has always been booked as one of the absolute top stars in that company, without question. I think the problem with the Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt, or the problem with Randy Orton being inserted into the Wyatt family is because it's just that. He was inserted into it. It didn't feel like he actually became a member of the Wyatt family. And it just, me as a viewer, I was just waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, well, when is he going to leave? You know, because he never felt like he was Randy Wyatt. You know what I mean? He was just Randy Orton standing behind Bray Wyatt. Nothing altered about his appearance or his demeanor. I mean, even if he had done, you know, it's a small thing and maybe it would be silly, but the first thing that comes to mind is every member of the Wyatt family, including Daniel Bryan, has always had shaggy hair and a beard. That would have been something to see Randy grow his hair out and grow his facial hair out, you know? It would have added to the idea that he is now in this. I've always viewed the Wyatt family as a cult, you know, Bray Wyatt, the charismatic cult leader, he brainwashes people and, you know, he leads them into their certain doom, which is a great character for a pro wrestling heel. You know, that's perfect. But I don't think the fans ever bought it. I feel like the fans can play along, but you have to convince them, you know? Because, I mean, it's you know, there's nothing wrong with the fans being smart, or probably more accurately, thinking that they're smart. Because as Raven said many years ago, the smartest fans are the easiest ones to get. That being said, Randy has always struck me in the respect, does he... Let me start that over. I mean, Randy is, I always felt, was kind of like a Randy Savage, where he is perfect in the ring, but saves his best stuff for a big match or like a WrestleMania, you know? I'm not saying that he doesn't... I mean, really, the thing with Randy is, as an absolute master he is in the ring, it is still just a job to him. You know, I mean, wrestling is in his blood. It's in his family. He's clearly gifted at it. You know, he was part of that unbelievable class of Ohio Valley wrestling, like all those stars that came out of, you know, Jim Cornette's camp down there. I mean, it's just, you know, you can't take anything away from him, but I think that is an accurate portrayal. Like if he needs to be there at 8 o'clock, he's not showing up at 7:58, you know? And if he gets 15 minutes for lunch, you can bet your bottom dollar he's taking 15 minutes for lunch, you know? And as soon as he can leave, he's out the door. You know, it's like in a cartoon, you know, where Randy was just standing. Now there's a little dust cloud in a Randy Orton shape and he's gone. And more power to him. You know, there's too many guys who forget that it is a job and it is finite. You know, I mean, you're a pro wrestler, and in my eyes, when it's an artistic endeavor, it does become part of your identity and who you are. But pro wrestling in particular has such a short shelf life. You know, you cannot, I mean, Mil Máscaras would disagree. You can't wrestle your entire life, but it's true. And a guy like Randy, I don't think it's that he's disinterested in pro wrestling, because you don't get that good because you don't care. But I think he's smart enough to know that it's a job, and it's not. He doesn't have to kill himself, you know, to do his job correctly. And it's also, Randy is in bad shape. He's had bad, you know, neck and shoulder problems for years and years. So in that respect, also, he's extremely careful in the ring, and he needs guys who are going to take care of him in the ring. You know, I mean, it's as brilliant and as fearless as Daniel Bryan was during his career, you know, he paid the price for that. If Randy got concussed in the Brock Lesnar match, then, you know, I'll pray for him, because that, we know more now than ever that is no joke and nothing to sniff at. But I mean, it's Randy is Randy, and it's part of his charm and his appeal, because I can't think of anybody in pro wrestling who doesn't give a crap more than him. And I don't mean to say he doesn't give a crap about wrestling, or he doesn't give a crap about, you know, quality or stealing the show or any of that. But I mean, just his attitude of like, Randy doesn't have anything to prove, but he still goes out there and proves that he's one of the absolute best. And I really appreciate that about him. But I mean, I think Randy, no matter how much time he's allotted, wrestles like it is going to be a 45-minute match, you know? And I think he would greatly benefit from a match of that length, or even a full hour, you know, because it's like, he's got gas in the tank and he can keep going, you know? I mean, what would have been amazing, you know, if we're talking fantasy booking, is to imagine Ric Flair in his prime versus like a Randy Orton of today or a few years ago, because it is like, those are two guys that, you know, or like a Ricky Steamboat, you know, I think those are fair analogies. Because it's just Randy is just so damn good, and he knows it. But it's also there's no cockiness to it, you know. Even though you could make the argument that you don't become a pro wrestler because you don't think you're the greatest guy in the room. You know, it's an ego driven business. It's a personality driven business. I didn't become a stand up comedian because I didn't think I wasn't the funniest guy in the world. You know, but you still have to go out there and prove it. You know, it doesn't mean anything if I believe it. I need the world to believe it, you know, and that takes a lot of work. But I mean, Randy's hilarious because it's so apparent that like he's so good at his job, but he knows that it's just that. It's his job, and he has a whole life outside of it, and he's smart enough to keep that in perspective, I think.
What's the attitude to Randy relative to other wrestlers in dealing with him, or how people believe they should act around him compared to others? Is he accessible and chummy? Is he kind of distant and all business? Like when you were around, were you sort of giving tips on how to deal with certain wrestlers, how to, you know, whether you should approach them, how you approach them? Talk about that aspect of Randy behind the scenes. I think I pick up on some of what you're saying, even in your answer, this last answer, but hone in on that a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, there was never any wrestler that I was given explicit or even intimated instructions on how you should deal with them or approach them. I mean, it was more, the only person that I was spoken to directly eyeball to eyeball about that was when dealing with Vince, because they were like, I remember the first time I was going to go into Gorilla, and they were like, how thick is your skin? Like, stand up for yourself. Like, don't apologize. Like, don't be, you know, don't do anything that's perceived as weak. But that's the big thing. It's like, if Vince starts giving you a hard time, you need to stand up for yourself, because otherwise you're done. And that's, you know, that was basically it. I mean, it was like with Randy, it's, I could see people perceiving him as being, certainly all business, but even as severe as something like aloof, you know, cause it's just, he doesn't care, you know, he's got nothing left to prove, you know? So it's like, but I mean, as far as socially with the other wrestlers, I couldn't speak to that. I mean, I don't know who's friends with anybody. I was the same way as Randy. I did my job and I kept my head down. And as soon as I was able to leave, I got out of there because it was, you know, that's a high pressure situation. But I mean, my perception of a fan and someone who's been aware of at least what information we think is necessarily true that gets out is that Randy has a lot of pull there. And certainly it's just being a viewer. You can see that. Like he is protected. He is pushed. I would imagine that what he says carries a lot of water with the higher ups in that company. But I mean, that being said, he's extremely professional. I've told this story before on the We Watch Wrestling podcast, but if it wasn't my first week at TV, it was one of my first weeks at TV. It was at a SmackDown. You mentioned Daniel Bryan. I was there for the very first match that Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton ever had. I couldn't put an exact date on it, but it was probably somewhere in February 2012. And I just so happened, where I was standing in Gorilla was right next to the curtain where they would come back through from the stage. And I was standing next to Randy as he's talking to Bryan about, like, look, just be careful when you're in there with me about like this, that, and the other, like my shoulders, like I can't like move my arms up this way, or like if you're putting pressure on the top of my head, like, because, and Randy even turned to me and started like demonstrating what he was talking about to Bryan on me, and like lifting my arm up and putting like his elbow down on my head and stuff. And it was hilarious. And he's like, oh, sorry, I shouldn't have done that. And the whole gorilla popped. And so I remember Ed Koski and Michael Hayes laughing their asses off at me when that happened. I was like, no, it's fine. This is one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me. But that being said, too, is literally the first time in my life a pro wrestler put their hands on me. And as a matter of fact, probably the only time, God willing, that I could feel how strong he was. And I could feel, it was the first time it really opened my eyes to, oh my gosh, the art of what they do and how good this guy is at it. Just in that 5-10 second interaction, because I felt him grab me with all his strength, yet he knew exactly how to not hurt me. And like, he put his elbow on the top of my head and he did it, you know, and I felt it, but it's like, I could feel him not hurting me. He knew exactly like the exact poundage, the ounces of pressure to use. And it's like the way he moved, it was like, oh my God, he's about to slam his elbow on my head. But like, I was like, oh my gosh, this guy is insanely talented. They all are, you know. It was my first real and probably only interaction on that level with pro wrestling of like, oh wow, this is extremely eye opening. And to the more specific level of how talented Randy is, because I was like, wow, he knows exactly what he's doing. It's unbelievable. So yeah, I mean, that was cool. But I mean, it's like, it, at no point during the conversation did it feel like, oh God, Brian's going to get fired because Randy was less than thrilled about this, that, and the other. It's like, no, it's right. Not like that at all. I mean, but I mean, who knows? I don't know anything. You know, I'm not in that locker room. I don't know what gets said in between matches or during the match or, you know, it's like any job, there's politics. I mean, we always hear about the politics in the WWE or anywhere in pro wrestling. That's life, man. That's any industry you're in. I don't care if you work in a factory, a graveyard, or an office. Somebody doesn't like somebody, and they're going to talk about it to somebody else, you know. And if somebody has some power and some pull, they're going to abuse it. I mean, that's just life. That's exactly what it is.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to cut to a short break. When we come back, I want to hear more about what you've got coming up, Matt. You can plug your podcast and your website and all that good stuff, and then we'll take some emails and calls. Our phone line is 515-605-9345. 515-605-9345. Ex-creative team member with WWE, Matt McCarthy is my guest, and after this break, he'll talk about his podcast and other stuff going on in his professional life. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. We are back, and during that break, you heard plug for MMA Torch. We got the Fedor Mitrione match coming up on Spike TV on Saturday night, so we'll have live coverage of that over at MMATorch.com. A busy week with George St. Pierre reportedly back with UFC for a multi-fight deal. Terms agreed to, contract not inked, no announcement officially yet. A credible report saying that's going to happen. And Brock Lesnar, officially, for now, retiring from MMA. I talked with Todd Martin, PW Torch VIP audio analyst, about that on the two-hour episode of The Fix that we recorded last night. And that is available for VIP members, discussing what this retirement means and if Todd thinks Brock might still come back and fight in MMA someday, plus a UFC show on Sunday night. All kinds of great coverage over at MMATorch.com, including fights to make next based on what happened at UFC 208. New contributor writing about the fights that make sense for each of the winners and losers from Saturday night. Matt McCarthy is my guest, ex-creative team member with WWE, professional stand-up comedian, and host of the We Watch Wrestling podcast, which, Matt, you're about to tell everybody about. How can they listen to you more often?
Well, you can go to WeWatchWrestlingPodcast.com, or you can go to HeadGum.com. Our podcast is every Wednesday. New episodes drop every Wednesday at 3:16 a.m., hosted by myself and two other comedians, two of my best friends in the world, one being Vince Averill, who I mentioned before, lifelong pro wrestling fan, one of the funniest guys I know, and then Tom Sibley, excuse me, our dear friend and fellow comedian. Tom We started the podcast in the summer of 2012, and Tom started watching pro wrestling a little bit before that in 2013, summer 2013. And we started the podcast a little while after in 2013 when Tom first started watching wrestling. So it's a very unique show because it's not just a recap or review show. It's not just a nostalgia show. It's not just a comedy show. It's all those things at once, and it's three friends talking about what it's like to be a pro wrestling fan, you know. And we do our best to keep it positive and to keep it a celebration of pro wrestling. There's nothing I dislike more than in any medium people who claim to be a fan of something and all they do is complain about it. I'm like, well, it doesn't sound like you like it at all, you know. And I find that a lot in pro wrestling. You know, it's very easy for us to find the negative and complain about WWE or New Japan or whatever indies we go to, if it's PWG or AW or AIW or, you know, whatever, you know. It's such a great time to be a pro wrestling fan, and there's nothing to complain about. If you don't like something, move on to something you do like, you know, and that's the attitude we try to have. And it's really something. And we've really kind of cultivated a great listener fan base. And, there's a pretty cool community on our Facebook group, facebook.com/WeWatchWrestling. And, we have been doing some live shows. We've been touring around. We were in New York last year. We did a couple live shows here in Los Angeles, and we're going to be, it turns out our most popular city is Chicago. So we are going to Chicago March 11th, the same day that Chicago celebrates St. Patrick's Day in their city. So I will be wearing my authentic Sheamus t-shirt, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll have exclusive merch. You can get your tickets through links on the We Watch Wrestling Podcast website, wewatchwrestlingpodcast.com. It's going to be 7 p.m. on March 11th, Saturday, at the Beat Kitchen in beautiful, scenic Chicago, Illinois. And tickets are $20. It's 17 plus. Not our rules. It's the bar's rules. But yeah, it's going to be a really fun time, and I encourage everybody to listen to the We Watch Wrestling podcast.
Excellent. Matt, as always, welcome. You're welcome to bring our listeners over to your show, and I know we have some who have found your show and become big fans of it over time, so it's always good to hear.
Yeah, we ask people all the time, how'd you find about the show? And plenty of them are like, heard Matt on the Torch. Been hooked ever
awesome.
Since. So I can't thank
Excellent.
You enough, Wade.
Oh, of course. Well, it's mutually beneficial. We really appreciate you being a guest on this show on a regular basis. Speaking of which, let's bring Romeo from New York City onto the program. I think he has a related comment and question. Go ahead, Romeo.
Well, hello there. first of all, anyone listening to the sound of my voice, if you love professional wrestling, go out there and buy Pro Wrestling Fan by Matt McCarthy. You'll laugh.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I forgot to plug that. Thank you for reminding me, Romeo. If you go to thisismattmccarthy.com, that is my website, we still have a few copies left of the 7-inch mystery colored vinyl that I released through Vince Averill's now revived hardcore label, Capsule Records. If anybody's an old school hardcore fan, you'll know exactly what Capsule Records is. And yeah, it's a single. It's like a 9-10 minute routine. I do all about what it's like to be a pro wrestling fan, and it's an idea that came from doing the podcast. And fans of the podcast have been listening to me develop it over the years. And you know, it was in a version in a form that I was very happy with and put it out. And it's still evolving. There's still things being added to it, and it's an ongoing thing. But if you don't have a record player, you know, get one anyway, because it's a cool collector's item. It's a limited edition deal. And if you want it on digital, it's available on all platforms, Spotify, Amazon, Google Play, all that. Check it out. Matt McCarthy, pro wrestling fan. Romeo, oh, Romeo, you're the best.
Go ahead, Romeo. What else do you have for us?
Matt, can you name at least one angle or segment that you pitched that you really wished was used by WWE? And another question for you, any chance that you and the boys will be doing another show in New York this year?
I don't know about this year necessarily, but hey, rule number one of being a pro wrestling fan is never say never. I mean, New York is, it's certainly been one of my homes away from home. I grew up in Rhode Island, so that is my home, but I became a man in New York City. I went to Fordham University in 1997 when I was 17 years old and lived there for about 15 years afterwards. So, I mean, that's really where I, you know, figured out how to live life. And now I'm out here in Los Angeles, been out here the last 4 years, and I love L.A. just as much as I love New York. So we will be back in New York soon enough. The first thing that popped into my head when you asked if there was an angle I ever pitched that they didn't use that I wish they had, there was, I couldn't put a date on it, probably later in 2012, because I was back on the home team at that point. It was in the midst of the John Laurinaitis CM Punk feud, and it was just trying to think of something outside the box. Of because Seg 1 is a very important segment on any of the WWE programs. And by and large, it's a talking segment. And it was around the time that it seemed like John Laurinaitis was going to lose his job as the, he used to say it every week, the executive vice president of talent relations and the general manager of Monday Night Raw and Thursday Night SmackDown. If I botched that, you know, that's on me. But at any rate, it seemed like Johnny was about to get fired. And so I thought, God, wouldn't it be funny if, because one of these things they always do, you know, that is tried and true is, you know, if somebody's getting ejected or somebody's getting fired, you can almost, but you know, it's like if you see a cake on WWE programming, you can bet your last dollar that that cake is going to be worn by someone at some point before the show is over. You know, Vince always says, show me the stone. Nothing is set in stone, but show me the cake, Vince, and then I'll show you somebody's going to wind up with it on their face. But that being said, whenever somebody's fired or they're being ejected, more times than not, person in the ring with the microphone will start the old na 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 hey 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 goodbye song, which is I love it. I love singing that at a wrestling show. It's a good time, excuse me. But the thing that was is I was thinking, God, wouldn't it be funny if they had a going away party for John Laurinaitis and, you know, all the talents in the ring, there's balloons, there's, you know, Bon Voyage, all this stuff, and, you know, they're like, we're having a goodbye party for John Laurinaitis. And Laurinaitis comes out and he's like, who authorized this? I didn't authorize this, blah, blah. And then CM Punk comes out and he's like, this was my idea, Johnny, 3-year surprise party, something like that. I'm pitching it right now far worse than I did, 6 years ago or 5 years ago. But at any rate, it was kind of like, you know, instead of Punk being out there talking and then John Laurinaitis coming out and being upset with them, I was like, well, why don't we flip the script, have, you know, this party's happening. And it was, and the idea was more like, I'm trying really hard to remember all the ins and outs, but it was going to play as though John Laurinaitis was throwing this party for himself. And then we see Laurinaitis is upset about it. And then we get the reveal that Punk was the one behind it the whole time to rub John's face and crap, you know. So it was, but I mean, it was just one of those things where it's like there was a lot of, see, I'm even, it was my idea, and I'm getting confused about how we got in and out of it. So it's like, so imagine pitching that to Vince too, and he's just like, I don't understand what you're talking about, you know. And believe me, I'm not saying Vince isn't a bright guy. He's probably literally one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. He is bar none certified genius. I mean, the man is a genius. Absolutely brilliant. But he's a wrestling promoter and a wrestling fan. And, you know, the cardinal rule of any art form or really anything is to keep it simple, you know, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. And if you're booking a wrestling angle that's too complicated, I know for me, if I'm watching it, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I've lost track. I don't watch. I cannot watch procedural dramas on TV. because it's just, it's all jargon. It's just like people talking fast. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I'm the viewer that has to sit there and wait, like when they're like, blah, 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 blah. And they explain everything technically and they use all the technical jargon and they finally get to it. I'm the viewer that has to wait for the one guy, usually Ice-T or Richard Belzer, to go, so what do you mean?
So what you're saying...
So what you're saying is he's trying to frame this murder on his mom? Boom. That's, thank you. I needed that, you know, so...
Oh, that's
so that's the type of thing I'm talking about. I mean, that's typical of any TV writing job where you're just like, you know, we need to communicate this as quickly and simply and straightforward as we can to the audience. Otherwise, they're going to change the channel, you know.
But what if you have 3 hours and 10 minutes to fill? Sometimes you got to stretch things out.
Oh, Lord. I mean, I was there when it made the switch to 3 hours too. And it was like, even then it's still like, God, where's the time going? Because there is so much to get in on that show. And it's just, you know, I'm sure, believe me, there's as Vince says, I've heard him say himself, there's more than one way to skin a cat. Well, actually, no, he doesn't say it like that. He says there's more than one right way to do something. And he's right.
Yeah.
There is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, more than one way to skin a cat. That sounds more like good old JR would say something like that. Vince would not use that analogy. But yeah, I mean, it's just, I'm sure there is. And that's why some weeks on Raw, the 3 hours drags. That's why some, like this past week on Raw, I was enthralled predominantly the whole time, you know?
Oh, I know,
I was
yeah.
just like, whoa, you know? So it's like, there is a way to manage the time, probably when it's at its best, and they strive to do this. But there's so many volatile factors, especially when the show is live, that, you know, things have to change or things change at the last minute and things get, you know, lost in the shuffle or forgotten or contradicted. You know, there's a million different things that can happen. But what they do strive to do is to have that thread throughout the show, do have that, you know, because it's wrestling, and he's a wrestling promoter, Vince, so it's like, give him something to promote, you know, what's going to be the main event, what's being set up in Seg 1 that I need to see play out, you know, all the way at the end in Seg 16 or whatever, you know, it's, you know, then what's the B storyline? Any TV show is like this, you know, you watch Seinfeld, and it's like, all right, Jerry's the star, he's doing this, what's Kramer doing, what's George doing, what's Elaine doing, you know, is it all going, and a really good episode of Seinfeld, all four of those storylines are going to converge at the end into one, you know, it's, I forget who the philosopher or writer was that said, when you take one idea and combine it with another idea, you don't get a third idea, you get a star, you know, and that's the brilliance of even something as simple as a pro wrestling show, is that if you can get all those things to, you know, merge together at the end, it's so satisfying for the viewer, you know, it's an art, you know, and art isn't art unless it fails, you know, and that's the most beautiful thing about it, is we get to see, well, what's going to happen next week, you know, this thing is never going to end. It is a mythology and a story with no ending. It's really quite something.
Romeo, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to go to another quick break. When we come back, more calls, and I also want to talk about the Festival of Friendship with Matt McCarthy, my guest on today's PW Torch Livecast Interview Thursday. Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you. We also have a print edition, a paper copy edition of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter. Yesterday, we just put up the latest edition, issue number 1,497. Been doing it longer than Monday Night Raw has been on the air. And you can subscribe and actually get home delivery of the paper copy of the newsletter if you want to read my weekly cover story on the biggest story of the week in pro wrestling. Weekly columns from Bruce Mitchell, well over 25 years with Pro Wrestling Torch. And also Greg Parks' weekly page 10 column this week. He assessed whether NXT is doing its job as a developmental territory. How do you grade it? Who's made it? Who hasn't? And what kind of job has NXT done in its original mission? That was this week's topic. My back page editorial reviewed all the developments, or all the key developments, from Elimination Chamber and Raw and SmackDown and how those affected Fastlane and WrestleMania. Plus, my reports on Raw and SmackDown and pay-per-views. This week, it was Elimination Chamber, of course, along with staff reviews. Short essays, in fact, by six staffers this week, reviewing and scoring Elimination Chamber, each giving their own perspective on what worked, what didn't work, and where things are headed, plus the Torch Newswire, Ringside Beat, House Show reports from around the globe, and more. And you can get a subscription by going to pwtorch.com/papercopy. pwtorch.com/papercopy. All right, Matt McCarthy is my guest, and so much going on this week, Matt. I am curious for your review of the Festival of Friendship, not the segment itself, but then as kind of part two and separate, the Kevin Owens turn at the end, and how that was executed and where you see it going from here.
I mean, if I was going to rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give it an 11. I mean, that was start to finish, easily one of the most entertaining things that they've ever done on WWE television. I mean, from the showgirls coming out because it's Las Vegas to, I mean, and it was funny, when the showgirls did come out, some of their faces looked a little less than thrilled. Maybe that's the wrong, some of them certainly looked a little confused as to what they were doing, what pro wrestling even is, maybe. But when Jericho came through that curtain, Jericho, I don't know how it's possible that he's doing his best stuff this late in his career. And that's not to say that he hasn't been good for the last quarter of a century. I mean, it is just his facial expressions alone. And then once you look past his, like, that smile, that ridiculous smile. I mean, my God, he's so talented. And then you get to the outfit, you know, the bedazzled hat and the scarf and the vest, and then he's got the list, my God. And then he comes down, and I would put it up there with Mankind doing This Is Your Life with The Rock. I mean, this was absolutely outstandingly, even if it had ended with the two of them still friends, It was still one of the most entertaining segments I've ever seen. The way that it ended was put it over the top. You know, I think that the way that it ended for me made it better than The Rock, This Is Your Life with Mankind, you know, because it wasn't just, because in a lot of ways, Rock, This Is Your Life, it just was kind of killing time. You know, it was extremely entertaining, but it was just another talking segment. This was the culmination of an incredible storyline between those two gentlemen. The return of Dwayne Gill as Gilbert, I jumped out of my chair. And it was, what was the most incredible thing was, is his goatee has gone gray too. I mean, it really, really yes. made me happy. What else am I missing? The oh my God, the painting of the birth of Kevin. That alone, I have never seen an audience go as crazy for a piece of art in a wrestling ring before in my life. I mean, that it reminded me of when The Rock gave Farouk framed portrait of The Rock, you know, which was one of the most when The Rock was really hitting his stride and figuring out who, you know, Rocky Maivia was. But I think it outdid that. Absolutely. I mean, just so unbelievably entertaining. And then, it building to Owens giving him the list of KO. the look on Jericho's face, and then just the that physicality, the powerbomb on the apron looked brutal. And then Jericho bumps headfirst into, you know, the Jeritron 5000 or whatever it was. I mean, and they immediately put the towel on Jericho's face. So I was like, oh God, I think he really bumped into that, you know, the screen of that gimmick. It couldn't have been done better. And there were so many times in their program where they teased that they were going to break up. There was even one week where it seemed like they had broken up. Then it turned out to be all clever ruse, you know, that they were inseparable, that they were best friends through and through. This was one of the most well-executed turns. If you even want to call it a turn, because it had gotten to the point where Jericho was basically a babyface in that pairing, even though he was still a heel.
It was a breakup more than a turn.
Yeah, it was a breakup.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Yeah, you're right. Jeez. That was the perfect execution of it. I couldn't think of anything better. And easily the best break spot I've ever seen in the history of Monday Night Raw. A break spot is usually when I'm watching a match, you know, somebody gets thrown over the top rope. They're on the outside, laying on the ground, writhing. The other wrestlers inside the ring, and you can kind of tell, all right, they're about to go to commercial. That's your break spot. And then they come back, and they're like, well, fans, here's what you missed during the commercial break, blah, 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 blah. Back from break. Jericho it was the clown, right? Oh, no, it was the magician. It was the magician. He's like, you're going to get. And then Jericho's about to say it. It was the longest pause before he said it in the history of Jericho. And then it's waiting till they come back from commercial. I thought that was just icing on the cake. I mean, it's just because it is that rock music thing of like you show up to see the band because you want to hear certain songs. You know, like if I went to see John Mellencamp and he didn't play Jack and Diane, I'd want my money back. You know, that's what I showed up to see. You get that with somebody smart enough like Chris Jericho, who knows you need to keep, in TV, they talk about it, like it's called a refillable segment. Like on, Jimmy Fallon will do the thank you notes. That's a refillable segment. It's something you can do, but it's different every single time. Jericho is very smart about his catchphrases and his performance being refillable segments where it's like, it's something you always expect, but he does it. He can do it different every time. I mean, it's not, you know, exactly a refillable segment. I'm thinking more in terms of his entire career. It's like he keeps coming up with new ways of being Jericho and still maintaining that character in a different way and keeping it completely entertaining without contradicting who he is at his core. He's probably the most talented I've ever seen at doing it in pro wrestling. But to find a new entertaining way to, you know, have that anticipation between saying it, to go into a commercial break and do it, I mean, genius. The probably the only thing that would be better, now that I'm talking it out, you would have to fake it, I think. It couldn't be a live match. You would need to, what I'm trying to say is, you know, people like Michael Elgin or I'm trying to think somebody else who does it. But I think Brian Cage does it as well. That like a delayed suplex where you have the guy up in the vertical suplex and you're holding him there. Imagine that. They cut to commercial break for about 4 minutes, come back. He's still got him up there. You know, that would be hilarious. Yes. But I mean,
I think
you need a gimmick.
What was crazy too bad is we had someone call in Monday night who was at Raw. And when they went to the break, they just turned the lights down in the ring and nobody knew what was happening. Like the crowd, you know, less savvy crowd who weren't thinking about, you know, the technicalities of commercial breaks and television timeouts. They were just like, what just happened? They thought the power went out in the ring and everyone, like people didn't get it. And then 3.5 minutes later, lights come up and Jericho's frozen in position. And they just picked up where they left off. It was like someone hit the pause button on reality, but it only affected the ring, And the power went down. So, yeah, it's one thing for someone to hold a headlock for 3.5 minutes in the ring, not wanting to waste any bumps with about 3 million people. But it wasn't like they entertained the crowd. They just turned the lights down. And then, I mean, even that was kind of like, I haven't heard of that happening before. You know, I mean, Jericho, of course, has talked through a whole commercial before. It's what put him on the map.
Sure.
I
remember somebody saying that, because lots of times sometimes they'll start the match before a commercial break, but more times than not, you'll see the ring introductions, and then they'll go to commercial break, you'll come back, the music is still playing. Yeah. I remember there was a cruiserweight match somebody put on our Facebook group. They were like, Rich Swann has been dancing the entire commercial break. And then they come back from commercial, and sure enough, there he is in the ring dancing, which I loved and really appreciated. But now that you mention it, while I was watching it, because I saw what was happening as soon as it went to the commercial break, and I was giddy. Couldn't wait for Raw to come back on. And when they came back, I was a little surprised that the audience hadn't picked up on it as well. And from what you've described, that makes perfect sense. I mean, they should have kept the lights up and just had Jericho standing there like a statue. And then, I mean, if they're worried about whatever they were worried about, I don't know. Because I know generally at Raw, during the commercial breaks, they will play things on the Titantron, you know, either trailers for DVDs or for WrestleMania, or, you know, if they, you know, the toy tie-ins or whatever, you know, they play their own branded commercials. I think that, from what you're describing happened, that's a missed opportunity. Jericho should have just stayed there the whole time. And if they're worried about the crowd losing steam or whatever, you got Kevin Owens in there. He can work a crowd like nobody's business and keep them going, and also sell the fact that he's like, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? You know, type of thing.
Speaking of KO, he had in recent months been part of a very memorable storyline, the friendship with Chris Jericho. And a lot of people are going to look back on this as one of their favorite things in wrestling. But at the same time, he's Universal Champion, and he's a prize fighter, and he's shown that he can be a badass who kicks ass too, not a character bordering on kind of a lackey to a cult figure. And that's as a fan of Owens and his potential as a main event draw, I was starting to get worried, will he recover from this? If he gets squashed by Goldberg at Fastlane and then breaks up with Jericho, when the fans cheer Jericho, they see him as a star, Jericho leaves and takes time off, where does that leave Owens? As a lackey without a friend who got beat and beat. Now, Monday night, he had a look in his face, the body language, the that look in his eye. It shows how versatile he is. I think he undid a lot of damage, if damage is a word you'd want to use, marginalization is maybe a better way to put it, of the seriousness, the serious side of his character that's more likely to draw money than just, quote, fill TV time in an entertaining way. I thought that look on his face and the intensity of the attack made him money again. In as much as, you know, people are money in WWE, it made him a serious player again. I was happy to see that, and I was kind of amazed that, I mean, again, the follow-up Monday is going to be as key as what happened this past Monday, but I'm excited to see what his explanation is and where he takes his character from here as someone who, whether he's aligned with Triple H or just guided by Triple H a little bit, it moves him back into the top mix. And now, Matt, I don't know what they're going to do at Fastlane when it comes to Kevin Owens and Goldberg. I'm going to pause you real quick because we've got to do our top of the hour break. When we come back, we'll get Matt McCarthy's thoughts on the Kevin Owens turn and the what I just described. We'll leave it at that. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, I did turn the lights down during that commercial break. I'm turning them back up again, Matt. And,
I know, what a missed opportunity for us to do a break spot of like, and then just jump right back in.
That's about as close as I can get, is asking a question and then cutting away before you get to answer.
Sure,
so anyway, yeah,
sure.
your thoughts on Kevin Owens.
He's at the top of his game, and he hasn't even gotten going yet, you know? I mean, I think there is something to what you said, because you don't want – I mean, you certainly don't want your champion to seem that he's playing second fiddle to somebody else. And then anybody who's paired up with Chris Jericho does run the risk of feeling like Jericho's sidekick, because Jericho is so charismatic just in and of himself. I think they did a good job. I think they did an excellent job in pairing those two up and keeping that dynamic balanced, in so much that Jericho, you know, kept saying that, well, we're the Universal Champion. So that kind of, you know, that raises Kevin Owens' status a little bit higher, because it's like Jericho is now in the position that he's leeching off of Owens, you know. And then I thought it was very, very smart to have Jericho start listing off all the times that he helped Kevin Owens retain the title, because it is a heel thing to have somebody interfere in your match and help you, unless you're Bayley, but that's a whole different story. But that being aside, I do think that match was booked very well, and I thought that, you know, Sasha being the equalizer does, you know. But at any rate, I was just trying to make a bad joke. But at any rate, Owens,
you should try to be a good joke.
Get that, yeah. Owens does get that look on his face when he says that, where he's just kind of like, I don't need you. I don't need your help. Because he's a heel. So he but like, he'll take the help. Absolutely. I'll take the help because he's a heel. But like, you know, at the same time, in his mind, I did it all by myself. I did it without anybody's help, you know? And that's the way a heel should be. A heel should always be able to justify their actions in a way that makes sense. Albeit it does illustrate how selfish and self-centered and self-serving that they are. That all being said, I don't know if jobbing to Bill Goldberg in 2 minutes necessarily hurts anyone anymore, especially after they did it with Brock Lesnar. That being said, I don't think Bill Goldberg needs to win the title. You certainly don't need... Goldberg versus Lesnar sells itself. Putting the title in there doesn't raise the stakes at all. You know, it doesn't make a difference to me. So there is a unique opportunity for Jericho's comeback to be potentially at Fastlane, because let's assume he's going to be injured for the next month before the pay-per-view. And instead of screwing Kevin Owens out of the title once more, because we've made it absolutely clear Chris Jericho hates Bill Goldberg, and that is, you know, we've known that since the 90s. What an interesting angle to take if Jericho interferes and once again helps Kevin Owens. What better way to rub Kevin Owens' face in dirt than to be like, I helped you win the title again, and now I'm going to take my title back at WrestleMania. I don't know. I think that's very interesting. And then you could even do a TV program with Bill Goldberg and Jericho, and Jericho's not going to be hurt by jobbing to Bill Goldberg in 2 minutes. Lord knows we've been waiting for that match for a long time, since 1998 or something, you know? I don't know. I'm just talking out loud here, but that's an interesting way to take it, and it is an interesting way to get out of, well, you know, it's because it's the Universal Championship is an incentive, and it's a selling point and a promotional tool to make a match more meaningful. Lesnar and Goldberg doesn't need it. They don't need it, you know?
If anything, the belt would benefit from being part of a match with Goldberg and Lesnar if it was worked a certain way, more than Goldberg and Lesnar would benefit from the belt. Like, that's a weird position to be in, but Goldberg-Lesnar feels big enough that, you're right, it doesn't need the title. the title would almost get a little bit of a rub from being part of that match, but only if the follow-up was if the match and follow-up made sense for a title to be on the line.
Right, and it is, and it's, and talking about it now, it's like the title has been such a integral part of the Jericho Owens story, because it you know, even beyond Owens being the champion, Jericho helping him remain champion, there is that very unique idea of, you know, Jericho saying, well, we're best friends, so we're both champion, and Owens kind of placating him, like, yeah, we're both champion, but, you know, I'm the more important one, you know, blah, that type of thing. It's what a cool opportunity for Jericho. And it's also, put the belt on Jericho. Why not? That'd be great, you know? Do a rematch down the line between the two of them, you know, and then, you know, then figure out what the Jericho program is after that. But maybe Jericho's going on tour and I'm, you know, not thinking of all the elements. But hey, you know, I mean, nothing wrong with a short Jericho title run. He wouldn't be hurt by that at all. And Chris Jericho is so smart and so good that you really can't do anything to hurt his stock. You know, you really can't.
Yeah. All right, let's bring Reginald from Portland into the conversation. Reginald, what have you got for Matt today?
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. 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 Hey, nice to talk to you, Matt. Finally, it's a real pleasure.
Hey, Reginald, I'm very happy to talk to you finally.
Oh, thank you, man.
Love it. That's perfect.
I agree with everything what you said about the segment. I really thought it was like Jericho and like WCW, but with a budget. And like back in like 97, like with the whole Gilbert thing, it was like nice little throwback. I recently was watching, because Stone Cold says so again, just for this nostalgic value. And
such a good
everything
tape.
We're seeing, oh, it's incredible. And I was noticing like Owens can talk trash with the best of them. Like he's like Piper good. Like when you give him a platform to just like cut loose. The cool thing about because Stone Cold said so is just like it's literally just like over like a half an hour of Stone Cold just walking around, tearing apart the television studios, pushing around a bunch of like, you know, a bunch of technicians in the studio and stuff, and like talking a bunch of trash. And I'm thinking to myself, if they no pun intended, if they took off the reins of Owens and just leaving the title out of the picture and all that other stuff, if they cut him loose, do you think he would benefit from something like that?
Oh, absolutely. Do you follow him on Twitter? I mean, that's all him just being him. I mean, let Owens talk for 60 minutes. Just let him just unleash. I mean, so good. I mean, that's the funny thing about the, Casone Cold Said So tape, because I remember that summer that I had that was the thing I would stick in the VCR to show people. I'm like, guys, you got to start watching wrestling again. It's unbelievable. And I remember my good friend Matt Groves, we're sitting there watching it, and he turns to me and goes, are they going to wrestle at any point? And I'm like, oh no, because it is. It's all talk up until, and then finally they show the Bret Hart Steve Austin match from Mania 13, which is just like, if there's ever a match that's going to get somebody back into pro wrestling, I mean, my goodness, what a perfect match. But now that you mention it, there is something to, because it's also like you think of that video they made. It's so low budget because it is. It's all just clips, you know, from, you know, what was the Saturday morning show with Todd
Livewire.
You know, he tells Sonny to shut up and stuff, and you know, him invading that studio, and you know, all the clips from Raw and Superstars of his interviews and stuff, and then him, you know, beating up poor why'd you beat up poor little Brian Pillman? And it's also amazing because he narrates the whole thing. But then the only original content is just Steve Austin standing in front of a green screen. And nowadays, the documentaries, the DVDs, they're so, you know, they are making very high quality documentaries with very long, in-depth interviews. There is something to be said of doing a throwback like that, of just Kevin Owens in front of a blank screen, posting his matches and doing the play-by-play over the matches itself. Because if you recall, like when they show the clips from that fateful 1996 King of the Ring, leading up to Stone Cold's coronation and the big 316 promo, every so often you get, it's almost like that DVD commentary thing you get more of now these days, where like Stone Cold would interject and like comment on the commentators watching the King of the Ring. Like when Owen Hart would say something and like, you know, Stone Cold would be like, that's the smartest thing that jackass ever said, you know, things like that. Kevin Owens is custom built to do that, you know, commenting on the comments, you know, and Owens has always had that strange, you know, obsession with the commentating team. Like, hey, Cole, watch this, you know, picking on Byron Saxton, you know, having that incredible, was it on Main Event or was it on the other one, Superstars, where, you know, one of the Usos had been on commentary for a while and then he finally has had enough and they have a match. I mean, it's just, you know, there's again, the best way to do something is the simplest way to do it. And I think presenting Kevin Owens in a format like that is, you know, just let him go. Just let him go out there. And like, he's, talk about somebody that you can trust to just pick up the microphone and know exactly who his character is and know exactly what his character would say, because there might not be anybody better at it right now.
Awesome.
Yeah. Anything else? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. One more quick question for Matt. What is your favorite WWE movie?
Well, the answer is The Oculus. That is a WWE, you know, studios film. If you haven't seen it, that is a really, really cool movie. I forget the young lady's name, Karen Gillan, she was on the very short-lived TV show Selfie, which was a crime that got canceled. I mean, it had a terrible name, so it was doomed from the start. And I'll be honest, I started watching Selfie just because I wanted to see how bad it was going to be. It turns out it was a brilliantly funny show. And then I was like, oh no, this isn't gonna make it, because it's got such a, you know, the title of the show was way too of the moment, and it dated itself before it even premiered. But that being said, God, what a funny, well-written show. And she is incredibly funny, and she's a wonderful actress. Fans of Doctor Who know all about her. But as far as a WWE Studios film that stars a wrestler, I would say the 12 Rounds 2 Lockdown with Dean Ambrose. Was that 2 or was that 3? I don't even remember.
3. It's 3.
Is it 3? Yeah, I thought it might be.
Yeah, I saw the advertisement at Raw.
Because Dean kills it in that movie. And me, Vince, and Tom, we went to the theater to watch that, you know, the night it premiered. We went to the Universal City Walk. I don't know what issue it is. Check the back issues of We Watch Wrestling, because we spend an entire episode recapping, you know, what it was like going there, what we had to eat, going and buying the tickets. And I, like, saying to the kid at the, you know, walking up to the AMC or whatever the movie theater was and saying to the young man, I was like, is 12 Rounds 3 sold out yet? And he's like, no. And I was like, okay, give me 3 tickets. How many are left? And he's like, well, there's 46 seats in the theater, and now there's 43 tickets left.
were there any late arrivers? How many were in the theater?
There were several late arrivers. There were, it was funny. There was a couple, all of us wrestling fans, one kid, maybe a couple of kids wearing Dean Ambrose shirts. There were two young ladies there who, we got a real kick out of them, how, they were big fans of Dean. But I mean, that was just, it, you know, that was such a fun movie. I still haven't seen the one. What's the one with Dolph and Kane where they're like cops in the backstage?
I got to tell you, you want a review of that? The Fix with Todd Martin a couple weeks ago. He spent about 20 minutes reviewing it and all its glory. And some people commented on rushing to their streaming service to watch it after Todd's review. It is magnificent for different reasons than Dean Ambrose.
I got to see that.
Yes.
Oh.
there. By the way, Matt, there is a scene where I don't want to ruin it, but it's if I remember Todd's time marker, I think it was around the 43-minute mark, 47-minute mark, so midway through the movie. And a woman and two or three kids come in an old New York City, like apartment staircase, and they walk up the stairs and they approach the camera. It's about a 8-second scene. They're walking up the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly they disappear and the door opens down where the people came in originally and they walk up the stairs again. The same people.
Good Lord.
They replayed the same scene twice, and it is still on Netflix in that format. No one's bothered to fix it. You get to watch a lady and two or three kids walk up the stairs twice. It's exactly the same scene. Zapruder filmed it. It's not like a second take or anything. So anyway, that's a hint at what to expect in that movie.
Oh, that's
there's a lot of cult moments in that one. So
thank you, guys. I'll get off the line here. And by the I can't unsee the 15-second ponderous look by every WWE reporter person, like when they ask a question after the wrestler walks off, because you guys pointed it out. I'm always looking for that. I always see it. It's so awkward, and I can't.
That's what we're here for.
have a great day, guys. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Reno.
You too.
Thanks, why can't Reno. They say Matt? Why can't Renee Young go, now back to you, Morrow, at ringside? Now back to Morrow and JBL. Well, I guess because there's so many announcers, it would take half the show for her to throw back to everybody. Now back to the crew at ringside. Why can't she say that?
Yeah.
What is the rationale?
I have no idea, because it's true. Like, she intros the segment. Why can't she outro the segment? Why do they walk away? Why do they walk away?
I know. It's just, and why do they not give names to the interviewers backstage? Like, they don't
give
women on either show a name. It's so, and it's not a woman thing, because they didn't do it on NXT to that one guy for like months. But
right.
It's so disrespectful and unprofessional. If somebody's on camera and they're conducting an interview, I don't care if they haven't earned, I think they just don't want their name to be known, so they can, if they don't last, they don't go out and start a podcast where their name is known. Like, I think that's why they don't mention referees by name. They didn't want the referees to be famous and go.
I think the thinking is more they're not the point, so they don't even get acknowledged. You know, it's they're not.
But that's
supposed
not how the
be,
world works. But that's
well,
not how the world works.
But
if you're on camera, you get your name. You get a name. That's how it works in the world. If you're on camera, the news anchors aren't the point, but the weatherman has a name. They don't just go to a guy who gives a weather report and then stares off in space pondering his forecast he just gave.
You're not living in the world. We're living in Vince McMahon's world.
It's a funny thing to get worked up about, but I get worked up about it, but in proper, perspective. But
no, but it is true. And when my wife is, darling enough to actually attempt to watch wrestling with me, that is and I've never pointed it out. That's one of the things that she points out, and it makes her insane. She's like, why are they just standing there staring into space for like 3-5 seconds? It is so awkward and unnatural.
Yes.
And it's true.
I know.
But I mean, I never even thought of it that way too. It's like, why do the wrestlers walk away? Just, you're being interviewed. Like, just stand there. Who cares? They could stare at each other.
I know. It's fun. It's quirky, but, okay. Last email here, John from Seattle. Thanks for the live cast today. Thanks for the great live cast today. I have a couple of questions about the Red and Blue Brand general managers. Will McFoley be fired from Raw before WrestleMania? And is the Battle Royal match for a number one WrestleMania contender the worst match they've had Daniel Bryan book so far? And do you think Luke Harper wins the Battle Royal? Your thoughts on the portrayal of the babyface GMs, Daniel Bryan and Mick Foley, and where they headed with Mick, with Stephanie disparaging him every moment?
Well, I mean, Daniel Bryan has certainly come off better because he doesn't have, you know, I mean, he answers to Shane in theory, but it's like Shane doesn't take a dump on him every week. So it doesn't undermine Daniel Bryan's authority as the general manager. Foley, on the other hand, is subject to Stephanie's, you know, browbeating, as anybody who crosses her path is, which is unfortunate because it is, Mick Foley is a commodity, you know, and he can be a lot more effective. You can be a babyface and still be stern. You can be a babyface authority figure and still have authority, you know, but the way that they book it with him kind of being, they make him look incompetent, you know, and he's constantly having to justify his actions and decisions to her. And it makes the viewer lose confidence in his ability to govern to manage the brand. I don't know if it'll happen before WrestleMania. I do see it eventually ending in him being fired. But what would be really amazing is if he quit, you know, if they did it that angle on TV where he finally gets his, you know, because there's no comeback for Mick Foley. There's no match that's going to happen between Mick Foley versus Stephanie McMahon. As intriguing as that match may sound, it's certainly never going to happen, ever, ever, ever. Nor do I think they'll do like a, you know, Mania 23 type thing where Stephanie has her guy versus Mick Foley's guy, you know, anything like that. You don't even need to do something as convoluted as that. But the only way that Mick can kind of get his face back, as it were, is to stand up for himself and quit in like a Dave Bautista, you know, leaving Evolution manner, you know. That was the name of that group, right? No, what was before them?
Evolution?
Right? Why doesn't it sound right?
I don't know.
I think you know it is because I have Revolution Pro on in the background, and I was worried that it was jumping into my head.
How about the Battle Royal and the decision to, since Randy won't fight Bray, even though they've been weirdly mysterious and vague about what winning the Rumble meant. It just meant you get to headline WrestleMania as opposed to earn a championship match against your man's champion or a champion. There's rumors maybe now Randy will end up fighting the Universal Champion at WrestleMania. I still to this moment don't understand the strategy of not just, I'm glad they're coming out with a rule book. I'm going to order it and read it. So I can see what that's all about. But yeah, it just seems like, shouldn't there be an explicit prize for winning the Rumble that isn't just this vague notion of you get to headline WrestleMania?
Well, what's also hilarious is we all know that Randy's not going to be the last match on the show. So it's like, why are we even playing the syntax game? You know, it's a little silly.
Yeah.
You win the Rumble, you get a title shot. That's the deal. It's this whole, you know, you get to headline WrestleMania, because it's also Vince loves this pipe dream of like, well, if you listen to Vince, every match on WrestleMania is the main event. You know, it's like we all know the main event is the last match on the show. That's how it works. That's the deal. You know, if it's boxing, if it's wrestling, if it's whatever. That being said, we got to do something, right? If Randy says he's not going to fight Bray, then does that mean he is? It's an interesting idea that he won the Rumble, but he is relinquishing his number one contendership. So then that forces the hand of management to be like, well, we need a number one contender because we need a title match to promote at WrestleMania. It never even dawned on me till now. That would be interesting if they made it a three-way, which is generally not something I'm a fan of. But Randy versus Luke versus Bray could be interesting, albeit maybe it would turn into just Bray and Randy beating up on Luke. Although he is a monster, that'd be a hell of a way to get him over, that he can handle both of them. Could hurt Bray. because he's supposed to be the top heel. But then you could get into the Randy versus Bray thing. I don't know. I'm just spitballing. But
yeah,
I love a good battle royal. And if Luke Harper's going to be in the battle royal, then I hope he wins it, and I hope he goes all the way to WrestleMania with it. You know, I don't know. I mean, I didn't even realize that people weren't too psyched on it. But again, I think I'm not necessarily saying anybody who doesn't like something is wrong to not like something. You can do whatever you want. I'm just saying, pro wrestling fans, I wish that we could, instead of dwelling on what we didn't like, we can just celebrate what we do like, because we're so lucky that we get to be pro wrestling fans in this day and age with the talent that's out there and with the technology at our fingertips. We can watch shows in Japan, the UK, Mexico, East Coast, West Coast, North Coast, South Coast, everywhere, whenever we want. And there's too much content. There's too much pro wrestling. I used to, you know, long for the days when it was like, God, I could watch WWF on Channel 9, then on Channel 38, Channel 64, watch NWA on TBS, you know, watch WCCW on ESPN. You know, it's like, oh, there was so much wrestling. There was so much wrestling everywhere. And now there's too much. And it's better now than ever. And there's too much of it. I can't even keep up with all the WWE products. Least of all the international and independent promotions. I mean, we're the luckiest people in the world.
What do you recommend, or what are you into right now that isn't WWE? What are you most excited to watch and devouring these days outside of the WWE brand?
PWG and New Japan Pro Wrestling, I think, are, you know, far and away the best promotions out there as far as just watching the height of the art. Kenny Omega.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just about the English announcing too. Include that in your conversation if you've listened to Kevin Kelly and Cyber so far.
No, because it's when I'm watching a Japanese show, I want to watch the Japanese show, and there is something I don't need to necessarily understand. The announcers, and lots of times I can find the announcers quite frankly distracting. When I'm at PWG Live and I attend the show live every single chance that I get, it's the way wrestling is supposed to be. It's a spectator sport. You're there live, watching it live. There's no commentary at all. When I get the PWG DVDs, not because I don't love Excalibur or whoever's sitting with them, I turn off the commentary because I want to watch the match, and it helps me focus on the match. Watching the Japanese stuff, particularly New Japan, is such an incredible experience because I get the benefit of the energy and excitement of the announcers, but I'm not distracted by focusing in on their words. Instead, I'm focusing in on the work I'm seeing in the ring. But I can still get that charge and rush of emotion from the way that the announcers react to things. And it's also funny sometimes because all of a sudden I realize, wait a second, Jushin Thunder Liger's talking. I had no idea his voice was all that grizzled and strange sounding. That's the most hilarious thing in the world. Or like if Tanahashi sits in or Chono comes in once in a while, you know. It's just, I love observing just that Japanese culture and even things as simple as just the text of their language. It's such a gorgeous looking language. And the flourishes the writing of the words is an art unto itself. Calligraphy. The calligraphy of those words is just beautiful. And those characters, I guess, is more accurate to what they are. But it's like when Kevin Kelly and when it was Carino and now it's, you know, what's his name from ECW? You just said his name. I can't think
Cyrus.
Of it.
Don Kelly.
No, Cyrus. Yep. Yeah, I'm just, I enjoy understanding what's happening. But when I'm watching a pro wrestling match, nobody's going to tell me that story better than the two guys in the ring. You know, I don't need play-by-play guys to tell me. I mean, if you want to give me some history lessons, then I'm all for it. But that's what the package is for before the match, you know? And if anybody doesn't subscribe to New Japan World, do yourself a favor, because there's much more English content than ever. And their little documentaries they do have very good subtitled English translations. You know, I just watched the Hanma one the other week, and it is just, it's fun seeing what, you know, because you get such a rich impression of what that character is and who he is in the ring and the way he does his matches and the way he misses those headbutts and some, like, is on his losing streaks in the G1. But then to see him just talking and see where he came from, and even just watching him eat a meal and, like, being very conscious of what he eats and peeling the skin off chicken and being like, well, what does Tanahashi eat? I eat all the same things he does. Why can't I get my body to look like his? Like, it's like, God, of course Hanma would say that. That's like, the guy's jacked out of his mind, but he just comes up a little bit short, and that's what that character is about, you know? And then beyond that, all the Kenny Omega and Young Bucks stuff, of course, they're going to be speaking English anyway. But, I mean, it's just like the Tanahashi docs, being able to understand what he's talking about and reading those English subtitles, he's hilarious. He really is Japanese John Cena, because he's like, he has such a clear sense of who he is and what pro wrestling fans respond to. That in and of itself, I mean, beyond the in-ring stuff, because they do present it like it's a real sport, and they do, you know, conduct a match that seems pretty darn brutal, you know.
Does your intelligence feel insulted that they pretend it's real, or does it make it better?
No, it insults my intelligence when you tell me that it's not real. That
exactly.
Insults my intelligence, because what am I watching it for? Like, If I'm watching Silence of the Lambs, if at any point, you know, Hannibal Lecter winks and turns to the camera and winks and says, my name's really Anthony Hopkins, I'm from Wales, it's just, well, all right, pop the tape out of the VCR. I don't need to see what, you know, it never makes sense to me. It never makes sense to me why it confuses people to get emotionally involved in pro wrestling. Oh, because it's fake? What are you talking about? Everything's fake. According to the president, the news is fake. I mean, you know, what do you want? What do you want? Because it's like, I've never seen a movie that was real. Even the documentaries, those are fake. Documentaries are the most manipulative type of movie because they present themselves as real. But never forget, you're only watching what the camera shows you in the order that the director has decided he wants you to see it. A lot of people don't know this. They write scripts for documentaries. They have a script that they are shooting and filming. If I want to pitch you a documentary, Wade, I'm not going to walk in the room and be like, I want to make a documentary about Wade Keller. They'll be like, great, where's the script? Let's see what the movie is you want to make. You know, it's not just walking around following someone and being like, oh, wow, this is what we've got. Now we know what the story is. No, you are making a movie. It's not a documentary. It is a documentary movie. The first documentary ever, Nanook of the North. It's fake. I mean, he really goes to Alaska or wherever it was, and he really finds, you know, an Inuit Indian. But there is at no point, like, there are scenes in it that he's telling you this is what's happening. They're almost starving to death. This is in the harsh winter, blah, blah, blah. It's staged. It's totally staged. One of my absolute favorite movies of all time, Roger and Me, such a great documentary. There's plenty of things in that are totally staged. It's just Michael Moore trying to convey the emotion and point that he wanted. The whole point of the movie of Roger and Me is that Michael Moore is trying to interview the CEO from General Motors. He already had. There is a magazine interview years before that movie where he sits down with the head of General Motors and they have a very long conversation. But that wasn't the point of that movie. The point of that movie was supposed to be, I'm the little guy fighting the big guy. And that's what I love about pro wrestling. That's probably what I love about Roger and Me. And that's absolutely what I love about stand-up comedy. It's the little guy fighting the big guy. You're supposed to swing up. Any comedian that swings down and they attack people who are either, you know, sick or in a bad place or, like, you know, aren't doing, like, I don't think that stuff's funny. You know, Craig Ferguson said it. We're supposed to attack the politicians, the Trumps, the blowhards. You know, it's like you know, if a comedian's aim is off, he's going to be extremely unlikable because you're picking on the little guy.
Yeah.
Take it someplace else, pal. I have no interest in that at all. And that's why pro wrestling is amazing. The people who pick on the little guys, they're heels.
Matt, I could do another hour and a half and not even not even scratch half the topics I want to talk with you. But thank you so much. Great
it
hour and a half.
It goes by so fast every time, it Wade. Does. Every time.
Yeah.
In a blend.
Absolutely. And man, there's so much going on right now. We got to have you back on, hopefully before WrestleMania, maybe digest some more of the things going on. If you got a Thursday afternoon to do that again, we'll be in touch on that one. All right.
I would love it.
Any last plug, anything you forgot, anything you want to accentuate, your website, Twitter, give people the final pitch.
Well, you can go to thisismattmccarthy.com for all your Matt McCarthy needs. You can get a copy of the Pro Wrestling Fan Mystery Colored 7-inch Vinyl, or you can get a copy of my 2010 stand-up comedy CD, Come Clean. You can contact me directly through the website. I will even autograph it for you, and you will enjoy it. Both of those performances are available digitally. And I am a big fan of the Grateful Dead. And so anytime I have a recording, there are no edits. There's no, lots of times you get a stand-up special or an album and they do like two or three nights in a row and they edit it together to have the hook. I don't like that. I don't do that at all. Everything you hear is what happened as soon as we hit record and then when we hit stop. No edits, no stops. So that's what Come Clean is. That's what Pro Wrestling Fan is. And that's what I think comedy is. And for pro wrestling, you know, you can't stop and start over. You know, that's one of those things. It's like, if you're going to walk the tightrope, let's walk the tightrope. And if you want to hear more about what I think about pro wrestling, check out the We Watch Wrestling podcast every Wednesday at 3:16 a.m. Go to wewatchwrestlingpodcast.com and follow me on Twitter at McCarthy Redhead.
Matt, thank you so much. Great talking to you.
Thank you, Wade.
You
Absolutely.
Bet. That's Matt McCarthy, ex-WWE creative team member. Just heard all about him. Check him out. Follow him. Follow his podcast. Go VIP, and you can hear ad-free versions of this show Monday through Friday. Tonight, Thursday night, following TNA Impact, I was going to say Matt, Mike McMahon, not Matt McCarthy, to M-Mix. Mike McMahon is joined by Andrew Socek, and they will break down TNA Impact, the state of TNA, do some trivia, do some flashbacks on TNA. Check out their show live if you can. If you're a TNA fan, it is tremendous if you watch back live and then call the live cast and engage in conversation with Mike and Andrew. And you can also, of course, listen on demand at pwtorchlivecast.com or just subscribe to our show on iTunes or popular podcast apps out there in the podcast universe. But we'd love for you to go VIP. I just started plugging that, and we're going to go to our ad on that tells you all about what comes with the VIP membership and how you can go VIP. Thanks, everybody. Until tonight, when Mike and Andrew take over, and then tomorrow with Bruce Mitchell and Rich Fan, this is Wade Keller signing off. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts, The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables with the one-hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to pwtorchvip.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly, and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PW Torch. And follow our sister brand at MMA Torch. Don't forget live coverage Saturday night and Sunday night at MMATorch.com. And right now, you can check out PWTorch.com for results from the SmackDown WWE house show over the weekend. And find out who was in the main event and what happened in the supporting cast, plus a review of last night's television show, NXT, with the UK Championship being on line. Plus, we got a full detailed rundown, speaking of New Japan with Matt, of the New Beginning in Osaka, a detailed rundown of the February 11th event, and also notes on the SmackDown rating, result of 205 Live, talking Smack review in our opinions and features column, the Monday Night Rainsometer, talking points from Talking Smack, and we've got the hit lists coming up for ROH Impact, Raw, and SmackDown, and much more. So check out pwtorch.com every day. And that'll do it for me for today and this week on the live cast side of things. But I'll be by every day for VIP members with the Wade Keller Hotline and this weekend with the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. And, of course, tonight we'll have another Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show from 25 years ago. Retro radio shows never before heard since they aired originally in the early 90s in New York radio. And VIP members will have that waiting for them late tonight on the PW Torch VIP RSS feed that is for members only, and then also VIP members Saturday morning have waiting for them a new Pro Wrestling Torch back issue from 20 years ago this week in the heart of the Monday Night Wars. Fascinating behind-the-scenes news, hard-hitting editorials, Torch Talks. We're just wrapping up the Joey Styles in-depth multi-part Torch Talk in the 20 years ago back issues, my reports on Raw and Nitro, and much more every Saturday morning, a 20 years ago back issue. All right, here we go. Here's the music that you've been waiting for to mark the end of the show. Go check out other shows you might have missed. And until next time, Wade Keller, signing off.